Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's NOOM.com to sign up for your trial today.
Hey there. Welcome to Nick Pollock and Friends, where I talk to people I know and who you should know. Today, it's Greg Jewett. You likely know him from Reliever Recon. Greg, welcome to the show and tell everybody everything about yourself, where they can find you and what you're doing right now.
So everything about myself, that's a loaded one. But as far as the... Well, as long as Twitter's still alive, it's at GJEWETT9. And then obviously you hinted, we went independent not too long ago with the Reliever Recon launch, trying to just focus on the reliever market. And then in the past 2 years, I have been considered the closer expert with quotation marks around it for The Athletic. And that's in season, pretty much from January on, that's a weekly article that just focuses on relievers and all of the layers that go with it. It's just such a volatile topic that I somehow found my niche in, but here we are.
Yeah. Twitter will exist. I have faith.
I think people are overblowing a lot of this, but yeah.
I mean, that's a whole other topic I could spend an entire episode on. I think it's fascinating to say the least. It's one of those things where everyone is here, and that's always it's the unification of people in one place is so hard to achieve. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you remember when the Google Circle arrived, and that, of course, didn't happen. You know, everyone just still stayed on Facebook at the time. But those were different days. I want to start at the beginning, of course. I mean, I do want to get into a touch later on about how you started with Reliever Recon and how it's going at The Athletic and everything like that. And don't ever, quotations, you seeing yourself a closer expert ever again, Greg. It's the reason why I went to you to answer my closer question at First Bridge Arizona, all right? I had to answer a question about closers, no idea. So Greg, just give me the answer so I have like the best one for everybody. So let's start from the beginning, Greg. Where are you from? Where did you grow up?
I actually grew up in Syracuse, so I never made it. I was never made it out of here. Born and raised in Syracuse. Went to college not too far away at SUNY Cortland. It's only about 40 minutes down the road. Far enough that I could get away from home, but close enough if I needed something in a pinch, my mom or dad could get it to me. This has been a lifer. I thought I was going to leave around about, I was 28. My buddy was moving to Carolina because his whole family was starting their migration there. His brother went there, got a teaching job, which I was not able to get immediately out of college up here in Syracuse. It was tough. And then, we were going to go. And then I decided to stay up here. And then, that was back when I was dating Alex's mom and whatnot. And then, that just kind of kept me here. So and luckily I had my son here and, raised him as a single dad from 18 months on, but, he's what kept me going. So, that's what fueled, we'll get to the fantasy stuff later, but yeah, that's what kind of fueled all that. So, my present girlfriend, Katie, and I have talked about, when we retire from teaching, where we might want to go. If there's still water in Arizona, we would entertain it. I was talking to the guys out there. I'm like, it's such an advantage to be on the West Coast. Like I go to bed exhausted at midnight and games are still happening. And I wake up in the morning. I'm like, wait, that happened? And it's like, crap, If I was out West, I'd be writing it up by midnight and going to bed.
I've thought about that a lot. Because it'd be so much better because then I go to bed right now. I go to bed at like 1 a.m. Mm-hmm. Right. Because I'm doing all that. Oh man, I'd be done by 10 or so. I can actually just start writing it whenever I'd want.
Yep.
And then I realize, but the mornings work on the East Coast. And if I wake up, if I wake up at like 10 or sorry, at 8 o'clock on the West Coast, that's 11 on the East Coast. So much has happened.
Right. The energy. The information cycle is already churning. So
it's already 8 a.m. Eastern time is like when everything goes. So maybe you could say 7. You know, 7 to, and that's a huge, huge thing. And like by 3 or 4, everything slows down. That's like noon or 1 on the West Coast. It doesn't work like that. So I can't do it. Not to mention, of course, I mean, I'm never leaving New York. There's no way. But you're thinking Arizona a little bit if the water returns. Is that right?
Well, they have the water shortage out there, but right. You know, it would really depend on where we're comfortable and what we want to do at that point. But, I can see myself like in somewhere wide open. I was always jealous when I worked with Al Melchior and he was telling me about when he lived in Montana.
Montana. Yeah.
There's so many different places that I've never, I don't travel much. So like, last year when I went to First Pitch for the first time, that was my first time being that far west. Like I'd been to New Orleans and I had been to Minnesota, but that was like my first time really being in that time zone and that side of the country. It was strange for me. I was like, you know, it was cool, but it's so
have you been to LA yet?
The only time I've been in LA, well, I was stuck there in a layover. That was last year.
So it does not count. No,
I learned my lesson
like
this year
in Chicago.
Just, this year I just went from Syracuse to Philly to Arizona. I was like, I'm not doing that double exchange again. That's out.
Oh man. You've done a double layover before? No way would I. Oh dear.
I did that last year to save money. I was like, never again. I'll pay the extra hundred something bucks and just go two.
I absolutely hate flying. So I've gotten better. I used to have so much anxiety about takeoff and landing. And I think for me, what really fixed it was, you know, just even like turbulence, right? The whole thing's shaking around and it just feels so terrifying. I'm not in control of this aircraft and I don't really know what's going on and just kind of have to believe everything's fine, right? When everything's saying no. I realize that when I'm in a car, I don't drive, right? I'm often in shotgun and I don't drive because I'm from New York, everybody, okay? But there's no reason to here. But I realize how much the car moves. The car is rumbling along too, and I feel perfectly safe in that. So I was able to associate with it, which means I'm better at flying now. And maybe I would consider a double layover. It's actually like really cheap. I'm like, I can get reading done. You know, I can honestly in JetBlue, it's so easy. There are like all these movies now. I just dial into a movie and then you're there, you know? So maybe not so bad. I'll consider it next time. But yeah, you gotta stay in New York, okay? It's not worth it out there. New York needs more people like you, even if it's upstate and not in the city. Well, don't take Greg Jewett away from us.
Maybe the Adirondacks. If I had like a cabin or something in the Adirondacks, as long as I had some Wi-Fi, I told Kate. We tried to do a trip a couple years ago up there. And there was like one little Wi-Fi spot. And I was like trying to always migrate over there to get my NFBC line upset and this, that.
Yeah.
And she's like, that's not where we're up here. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But I have to set those lineups. But yeah. So I did a fob run and my thing didn't go through. And I ended up back then, I ended up dropping Jesse Winker, I think. And that was right before he went on his heater. And I meant to drop somebody else. And I was like, oh my God, it took the wrong, whatever.
Sorry.
That was my terror story in Adirondacks. But we still had a good week and went kayaking and did all the fun stuff.
Oh, that sounds great.
It's very calm up there.
I have two things I think about with the Adirondacks. One, I went there as a kid. I just remember like not appreciating it nearly as much. I was a kid and I was just, what is this world? And I you know, it's too cold to go in the water. That's the only thing I'd want to be there for. But the second is my dad. It was the same cabin my dad would go to when he was younger and his friend had one and he went up there. And there's a story of him going off for a swim and trying to heat himself with a stove. I'm so sorry, Dad. And trying to get closer to it. And he had his back facing it. And it wasn't his back that burned against the stove. And he had to go to the hospital. Because he touched it and he was just, oh boy. And like him in the car, like laid face down, you know, it's all I think about it. Oh, Dad. Oh man. That's not, he won't listen to this. It's fine, y'all. But the Adder, I mean, it's gorgeous. I can mm-hmm. still remember, even as a kid, how I didn't appreciate it, but it's still in my head. And I think of that memory now. I'm going, that was beautiful. Mm-hmm. That is, and it's just so removed from everything. And I appreciate those moments because I'm in the city. I have the other extreme of being so hyper involved that when you, and I don't like anything in between. I just like either it's big country, you know, just lost in it, or moving in a city. Otherwise, it's this, what do we do? Like, why am I here? You know, it's not the same for me. So when you were a kid growing up in Syracuse, what were the dreams and aspirations of Greg Jewett?
Well, first I was going to play for the Yankees, but that didn't come to fruition. I kind of decided, I think, and even like junior high, I was like, my parents will always come home from parent-teacher conferences and the teacher's like, oh, they think you'll be a good teacher. So I kind of internalized that. And I decided that I was going to be a teacher. So it didn't all go to plan because on my original destination, I went to Geneseo. But then when I got there, I was only 17. I was an October baby. So I was young.
I turned 18
till my freshman year. That was back before they advised you to hold boys back.
Yeah.
So the first couple of classes I went to and the teacher's like, oh, we don't have an attendance policy. And I was like,
all right.
Yeah. So I don't have to come to class. And my dorm was like, it was like four girls to one guy in the dorm. So, you know, I'm in this brand new place and I don't have responsibilities. So I figured, you know, high school was pretty easy. I didn't have to go to class. I'll just show up on test days and get my C's and move on. And
right.
Yeah. So I was packing my stuff up in December after failing out. And that was a pretty quiet car ride with my dad. You want to talk about a terrifying car ride?
Oh, my God.
I was the first person on his side of the family to go to college.
Oh,
and
wow.
I lasted 3 months. So I picked myself up off the ground. I went back to our local community college. I made up all my stuff. I graduated in a year and a half with my 2-year degree. So I did stuff in the
great.
Summer,
yeah.
Got all caught up. I was working probably 30 hours a week at the grocery store I worked at in high school, making extra money. And, so, you know, then I went to Cortland and I was literally in line to be a history teacher because I had great history teachers in high school. So I'm like, I'm going to teach history. And then I was right next door to the line for phys ed and I was starting to think, I'm like, wait a minute, you know, I like coaching. I'm going to be the next Billy Martin. I'll be a manager,
oh, yeah,
not
absolutely.
A player, you know, I'm right. going to be a player. Look at my body. So I was like, all right, so if I do phys ed, I get my coaching certificate. Plus I don't have to wear a shirt and tie every day. And then the nice thing about phys ed is I can have five of the same, like today I had five classes doing a fitness thing, but all five classes are at different levels. So they're not the same class. So I'm like, it's cool. So, all right, I'll do phys ed. I can wear sweats. I can coach. So I switched lines and did phys ed at Cortland, which, you know, just changed the whole trajectory of what happened with me. So that was that. So then, went to Cortland, got the degree there. On the last year of my teaching certificate, I got the job at where I teach now, Christian Brothers Academy. I coached there since 1993.
Oh, wow.
I got the teaching job. Well, I started coaching like before I had my official degree.
Mm-hmm.
So it all shook out. So it literally was the providence that I got the job teaching there. So then I've been teaching. This is my 21st year of phys ed. And I'm still at the same school. So you kind of, you know.
Oh, man. So you're a staple. Yeah.
Yeah. My son graduated from there as well. So that was mm-hmm. nice. That was a nice perk. He got to go there for free, even though it's a private school.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And that's a huge deal.
I ended up coaching volleyball there for 21 years. I coached softball for 15. We won sectionals in both, a state title in volleyball. And now I'm coaching the modified, but that's like seventh and eighth grade, but mm-hmm. it's fun because it's the fundamentals. I like teaching the game. Now I don't have time for the varsity season's far too long. So when my son was playing travel hockey, the modified fit our schedule better. So I just moved down and we have fun. So, you know,
so what is the modified?
Like I said, it's seventh and eighth grade. So
yeah, okay.
It's like junior high. So right, basically, right. I'm giving them the foundation to move up to JV or varsity. So
right. I think that was for us. Was it just middle school? I guess it was Probably just a middle school baseball team. Yeah. Okay. I didn't know if there was like modified meant there was something that was.
Oh,
like
no, there's nothing different.
Made.
I mean, yeah, it's just, okay. Yeah, just what we call it up here. It might just be junior high or whatever you want to refer.
Gotcha.
To,
yeah. But, right. Right. Yeah. Junior so high. That sounds.
Yeah. So like, sounds yeah, right. My baseball, that's when my baseball career ended. I was supposed to be a baseball prodigy, even though I had the nickname of Spanky growing up because I was the chubby kid.
No.
Pretty good at baseball. Oh yeah. Yeah. It ended eventually, but, that was a stigma I always kind of carried with me, but, yeah, I made seventh grade baseball, did decent. And then in eighth grade, the coach wanted to teach me a lesson because, there was a whole thing happened with basketball. I mean, you've seen me in person. I was never meant to be a basketball player, but I got cut from eighth grade basketball. So I tried wrestling for like a day and I was like, wrestling is not for me. No offense. It's a great sport, but it wasn't for me. So I quit wrestling and then the wrestling coach so happened to be the junior high baseball coach. So when I came out for baseball in eighth grade, he cut me to teach me a lesson about quitting, which I don't understand that lesson. So, well, the funny thing was, so I didn't make baseball. So I went and ran track, lost 20 pounds, no longer was called Spanky, but then I never played baseball competitively again. Can you believe that? That's... All this time I've spent writing about watching baseball. I stopped playing in eighth grade. And
because a coach had wanted to be vindicated. Yeah, a vendetta against you. Unbelievable.
And then the funny part, I'll make this quick, was years later, my friend that moved to Carolina, I subbed one night on his, you know, slow pitch softball league.
Yeah, sure. But, you were the ringer. Yeah.
But down there in Carolina, yeah, it was big time. I mean, so his third baseman played third base at South Carolina. I mean, that's D1.
Yeah, that's huge. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had a pretty good game. So at the game, he comes over. He's like, "Hey, man, where'd you play college?" I was like, I haven't played since eighth grade. He was like, "What?"
Oh, man.
So it was at that moment I realized maybe I made a mistake, but I don't know what would have happened. But you can't change those things. But it's just funny, those ripple effects.
Yeah.
You know, I lost weight and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to run track because I lost weight and I feel better about myself.
Yeah, there you go. That's good. There's so much I can relate to you about here. I mean, I quit judo, not wrestling, after like, I mean, I was six. It was like first grade or something. I took judo and I didn't really like it. But I remember on like the day that they give you their stripes for the thing. Mm-hmm. They listed off everybody except me. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, "Mom, I didn't get any stripes." And so my mom went to the teacher and said, "Oh, he gets three yellow ones. If you have a marker, you can do it." So I never did judo again.
Fair enough.
Which is my equivalent to wrestling. Even though, I mean, if we had a wrestling team, I wouldn't have done it for a day. I would have been like, absolutely not. You guys are getting so far low, and I'm just like, how do I get down there? I don't know how I would possibly do that one. I feel so bad for you that like you wanted to play baseball, and your coach, like, what a horrible coach. I've had some terrible coaches in my day.
Mm-hmm.
I purposely don't speak their names because I don't want their name to live in this way. Some very nice ones. My middle school coaches, actually, Phil and Barry, they were wonderful. I really enjoyed them. I still get to see Phil Kluger every so often in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you have a volleyball team that you still coach, 13, 14 year olds, I assume then, or maybe it's like 12, 13 year olds.
Yeah. Between 12 and 14. So they're high energy and they far outnumber me. I'm coaching the seventh and the eighth grade by myself. So you're talking, we've got 27 personalities in the gym for an hour and a half. And then when we have games,
is it co-ed, men's, girls?
No, it's women's, it's girls.
Okay.
Just girls.
I should say boy, it's the girls, men's, women's. But I mean, I coach, this is gonna be my 10th year coaching 13, 14 year old basketball. It's just rec.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so excited. The tryouts are next weekend and I can't wait. I haven't done it since pre-COVID because, you know, it shut down. And so 2000, I came back from First Pitch Florida. I had to leave it early. which was really annoying because there was going to be something that morning I was excited, but no, I had to take like one of the first flights out because I had my game at 5 o'clock that day, which the playoffs, the quarterfinals, we were like the best team, save for one other. And this was the quarterfinals, right? So it's essentially like the 1 versus the 8 seed, right? Mm-hmm. And in like the fourth quarter, my team just was choking and they would foul us. We couldn't hit a single free throw. And the other team was just hitting everything and everything. We're up at like 15. We lose at the buzzer. When we have the ball, we try and inbound it. He just accidentally passes it to the other team. They shoot a 3, miss it. Guy gets a rebound and puts up a layup and we lose. Like at the buzzer. And that is the last moment I've coached. And that was March 6th, 2020.
Oh, wow.
Or maybe like March 1st, actually, or something like that. And I'm just like waiting and waiting and waiting for another chance to like prove that I'm not that bad of a coach. I swear we won 3 years in a row before that. But you've been doing it much longer than I have. And I wanted to just pick your brain for a second about, let's say you're in my shoes, anyone that is maybe getting into coaching, like what are your tenets of coaching? What are the things that you insist you do in practice, or how you talk to them and how you coach? Like, what kind of advice would you give?
Well, older me understands now that I have to be much more patient. Young, that there was a reason I made the Billy Martin thing, because when I first started coaching travel softball, the dads called me Billy Martin because I was volatile, yelling at the umps and just like super intense, which is, it's cute, but it's not. So patience, every kid's at a different level. And what I'm trying to do in this same age group is fundamentals. I mean, every day we start practice with I do the same boring stuff. They have to do bumps off a toss. They have to do sets off a toss. They have to do what I call a hard set, where they throw it at you like a soccer overthrow. And
yeah,
so it's just, we do those same 30 reps every single day. I'm like, once you get done with that, then you can bump and set back and forth. So I know you're done, pepper. And then we start rolling through and I do variations of the same drills. And all I'm trying to do is simulate game action. And I try and do stuff through the drills that simulate games. And then at the end, we usually play queen of the court, which is like 3v3, and they get all excited and they want to be team that's the winners, and they have fun. But they're always, I remember last year a few times, like, how come we never scrimmage like 6-on-6? And I'm like, because scrimmaging in practice is boring. And they're like, well, we want to scrimmage. So one day I was like, all right, well, you beat this team. I'm like, they were pretty good. I'm like, you beat that team, I'll let you scrimmage the next day. So they win. So the next day I let them choose up their scrimmage. I had two captains, they drafted teams, and they literally played for like 5 minutes and they looked at me and they're like, coach, this is boring. I was like, well, I wish somebody tried to tell you that. they're like, can we play threes? I'm like, yep. And then they went and played threes and had a grand old time. Cause when you play the smaller, the 3v3 instead of 6v6, it makes you move, it makes you communicate, yep. and it's just more fun because you're trying to cover the whole court with three people and they have a blast. So, if you're having fun through fundamentals, then that's what we're trying to do. So, when game and they schedule so many, like I have 3 games this week. I'm like, it's so goofy. How can I teach these kids anything with games?
Yeah, right.
But it's okay. We'll get through it. So I talked to the kids about stuff today, and then I had a couple of conversations. Like, there was a girl that in practice is fantastic, and then once the ref goes up on the stand, she acts like she can't play volleyball. And I was like, I said, I need, like, I was watching do stuff. I'm like, I just watched you do everything fundamentally correct. You can bump, you can set, you can spike. I said, but once we put a team on the other side of the net, I feel like you're focusing on, I don't want to make a mistake, and then you're making 3. And I was like, I just need you to have fun. I go, take this, what you're doing in practice right now, which is fun, and just try and pretend to do the same thing in a game. Just have fun. I'm like, I'm not going to get upset if you miss a ball, but I want you to be active and go for it. And, just play.
Right.
That's all. I'm like, no one cares. And I've tried to say this over and over. I was like, no one's going to ask you if you're on varsity volleyball, hey, what was your modified record? They don't care.
Yeah.
I know right now you think it's a big deal, but you're going to look back on this in a couple of years and say, I might remember this game, or I might remember that practice where I finally learned to hit my overhead serve, or I finally got that spike down, or I did my approach for a quick. that's the stuff you're going to look back on, or just the fun. You know, I let him play music at practice, and you know, the athletic director's like, why do you let him play music? I'm like, because they move. I go, when the music's off, they like have less energy. I can't explain it, but this generation really likes, they love music. I played music today in the fitness center. The kids are bumping out their things. They're doing their workouts for 45 seconds.
What music are you playing?
I put on the Heat channel on Sirius because it plays the hip hop without the swear words.
There you go.
I teach at Christian Brothers Academy. I can't be having F-bombs dropping.
Hey, you guys know that I approve of this.
Oh, I understand that. So, and I tell the kids, I'm like, I'll let you listen to what you listen to, but it's got to be on my terms. So
yeah.
I said, we play this channel, and it, you know, so they're okay with it. There was a couple of songs today. They all started singing along. So I'm like, honestly, this is a popular song right now. I have no idea what it is, but they were, you know.
I feel so old, Greg. I feel so old.
I do too. I don't want to listen to my playlist, but it's okay.
I bet I won't know a single one. I mean, this is also like, since I was a kid, I was always like, I want to play classic rock. I want to listen to grunge and everything. All my friends were, but
see,
I still stayed on top of it, you know?
Yeah.
But then as I got old, I'm like, why? Why do I need to do that anymore? I'll just listen to all my guitar music.
Mm-hmm.
But those are great things. Yeah, it reminds me of, I remember another coach telling me that every practice there should be a game. The kids should always, especially in the rec league, you know, they should always have fun in it. And if they're not enjoying themselves being there, they don't have to be there. You know, like they should want to be there every time. So you should always have something that's enjoyable and they feel good and it feels lively, you know. And that's a really good point about like full-on scrimmages and stuff. It is boring, and 3-on-3 is so good because it makes every person get involved. It's more intense. You can make them shorter so that they can move them around quickly. You know, you can make a 3-on-3, like first to two or something like that, or whatever you want, and then just move it on.
Yep. I think that's great. A lot. I'll cap like in my juniors and seniors are playing volleyball right now, and I do have one group. So they went to six teams of like three or four people, and it's so much better because it spreads out the court. And then, so they play games straight 11, and then there's like three courts. So the top court's the top gun one. So if you get to the top and you keep it, then I give them the 100 for the day. But they, you know, they get after it, and they're, you know, they talk smack, and they're just moving and going. And that's all I want. If they're moving, I'm happy.
Man, I might also take your advice on the music thing. I think that's a really good idea. I haven't. My assistant coach was for 3 years. Keep in mind, this was eighth and ninth grade. So I had a kid I coached for. I coached way back in my first year when he was younger, and then I moved up, and then he joined, and that league after, and then I coached him for 2 years, and then he became my assistant coach for 3 years when he was still in high school, then he went to college. And now he just graduated. So now he's like an adult now. And he's going to be my assistant coach. I haven't seen him for 3 years. I'm so excited. I'm going to see him on Sunday. And I'm going to be like, all right, Malcolm, play the music. Like, figure it out. We're going to play music now. He's like, what? All right.
Yeah. You don't have to have it on all the time, because there's times I have to talk and coach. But you know, all right, during the boring fundamental stuff, like when they're doing their 10 passes off of, you know, go ahead. And like today, they were playing Christmas music, which I don't agree with, but hey, it is what it is.
You don't agree playing Christmas music on November 14th?
Yeah, there's
too early for you, Greg?
There's a lot to be said for when they're just singing and moving versus going through the motions during a drill. You know,
it is never too early to be excited for something. Let the joy breathe, Greg. If they want to listen to Christmas songs right now and watch Christmas movies on Netflix and everything, bless them. That's wonderful. I'm so happy that they get excited by it. Don't shrivel that.
I let them play it. Those thoughts were in my head. I didn't verbalize them.
I have a couple other things I do want to mention, but first we do have to take a very quick break.
When it comes to weight management, we tend to put our focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat, and that's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Try Noom today and see the results for yourself. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Okay, so a little bit more just about the coaching part. There have been things along the day. You mentioned routine too, about like, hey, this is what we do every day or so. Absolutely. I think it's, there's so many interesting things you can do to like institute tradition inside of a team that from the get-go, if you just say this is what we're doing, it will link in quickly because the players will like that they have a thing that they do together, you know? So for us, it's just like a layup line. They always do a layup line. They always do this amount, then they do this, then they do this, you know, and that's always the beginning of everything. My team is always the first on the court, and I don't need to tell them anything by like the third or fourth game. They're just doing it already, you know? That's important. Also, it's nice that I'm not a dad. Everyone else is a dad as a coach in this. And I'm like, instantly, I'm 6'4". They think I can dunk. I can't dunk. So it makes it a lot easier. And having that routine and stuff in game as a coach, instead of, you know, you learn not to yell at refs anymore. I'm proud of you for that. I still kind of do it because my kids will yell at them and I need to get in the way of that. You know, like you can, I'll take care of this. I know Frank. I know Pete. I know those guys. I hope it's still them now. How are you, like, what suggestions do you have in game being a coach?
There's going to be days where the kids are off, like that's, you know, when you were telling me when your team got upset there. I mean, they're kids. I mean, part of coaching them is, you know, there's going to be days they're not there.
Right.
And if you just recognize it, sometimes you can plug holes by putting a different kid in and seeing if they catch a spark. But in timeouts, I try and keep things succinct. There's usually, when they come in for a timeout, there's usually 3 points. I'll try and say, okay, we need to do this. We need to get the ball to target and run the offense, and we need to clean up the serves. And then I let them clear their heads for a minute. They know whatever on three, and then they go off into the sunset. If they come in, I'm trying to talk to them for a straight minute about everything that I want to fix within that. It's just, they're going to be, the timeout ends and they're looking at me like, what? So I just try and bang, bang, bang.
Yeah.
A, B, C, this is what we need to clean up. Do this, do this, do this, and you'll be fine. And then I always try and end on a positive. So like a lot of times if the other team calls timeout, they're trying to break up like my server. So if my kid's going out to do the serve, I'll be like, all right, so when you get out there, watch for them to dump the ball to try and get momentum back. I'm like, after Grace makes the serve, be ready for this. You know, I try and plant the seed. So it's like, so you could say, hey, after so-and-so makes the free throw, we're going to run the press or do whatever we're doing.
Right.
You know, I always try and walk them out with something that's, and I don't want the kid thinking, I can't go miss this serve because coach called timeout. I'm always like, after you make the serve, we're doing this.
Oh yeah, right. That's good. About, oh, I like that.
I want them thinking about what's going to happen correctly, not what could go wrong.
That's a really good, I like that. After you make this, not say you're going to make this, it's saying after you make this. Yeah. That language is really good. Love that. I try as best as I can to be less of everybody something. If I call a timeout, often it's just to, you know, I want to fix one thing. Or like slow momentum, sure, and stuff, but I'm always winning. So it's a I'm kidding. About targeting one thing per person. So if I call a timeout, I'm telling something to the point guard, I'm telling something to guys in the wings. Either it could be just like, you're doing great with this. You're doing wonderful. You don't keep doing what you're doing, right? And to me, games are, you know, that's where I really get to them. Those are the little teachable things. Hey, when he's coming off of that elbow, you need to shuffle one extra step over early to make him cross it over to the middle or something like that, right? Those little adjustments, and then they make it and I shout in the next possession, like, great job as they go down or something. Like, that to me is all of it for the most part. Just support, make, tell them the thing that they do. They will get practice at it, recognize it when they do it, and then just go, great. And that's it. Mm-hmm. You've done it's you move on to the next thing, right?
Yep.
It didn't really sink into me, Greg, until this, like how close I am to coaching again. Anyone really, it doesn't matter what situation you're in. I'm sure in your local community that everyone needs more coaches, more volunteer coaches. I guarantee you, do it.
Yeah, unless
it is so rewarding. I cannot express it enough. They'll be lucky to have you. You'll feel weird about it at first. You will screw up. I keep screwing up. I'm sure Greg doesn't, but I do.
No.
Really, really no jump into it. I think it's wonderful. So I want to transition in from here you are. You have this great situation going. You talked to me about your son being involved as well. What was he playing? What is was he playing a volleyball as well?
Oh no. He was following a baseball path and I was a little jealous. He was playing for like a travel team up here called Sports Zone. They were pretty good. He was a very good hitter. He was a good ball player. I enjoyed watching him play, but, at age 13, it was baseball and hockey were his main two. And after, I'm not independently wealthy, so he can only do one travel sport. And so after 13, the season was okay, but he was like, Dad, I think I'm more passionate about hockey. And I was blown away that my 13-year-old could look internally and say, you know what, I want to make a change. So he's like, I'd rather pursue hockey as far as travel than the baseball. So I was like, okay. And it's tough because in Syracuse, if you're playing what they call house hockey, that's not travel. It's less expensive. You get less ice time and you get like a half of ice for practice instead of the full rink.
Oh, wow.
So the kids that play travel get a little more, they get coached up more. So to do it at 13 was a tough transition, but we did it. And he got cut from a couple of the first teams he tried out for. And that's part of the travel game. Stupid dad, without any realization, I signed him up to do a Hamilton College camp. And I just thought it was like, I coached volleyball camp there years ago. And I was like, oh, the hockey kids, it's cool. They get to skate, whatever. Yeah. So I signed him up. He was a freshman. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really think about the birth year thing. So anyways, so I'm going to drop him off for the summer camp. And, he was going to be overnight by, staying with roommates in a room, which was cool at Hamilton College. And we get in there to get in line for registration. And the guy in front of us is wearing a Massachusetts state champ t-shirt. And I was like, uh-oh, what did I do here? So to find out that the camp, it could be up to 20-year-olds because that's age out year in hockey. So I had my 14-year-old signed up in this camp, but it worked. So again, Providence. So he did okay. The first day was a little fast. The second day he got a goal and his team went bananas cheering for him because he was like the youngest. Great. He was the second youngest guy there.
Oh my God.
Of the whole camp. So you're talking six teams of like 20 guys that were up to 20 years old. So anyways, during one of the games, my sister, the next day she called me. She's like, I don't know. She's like, somebody kept talking about Alec up in the crowd. I'm like, whatever. And this is probably a highlight and maybe my worst parenting moment ever. So one of the teams in Syracuse called the Syracuse Stars. And it was like a team that, Alec always dreamed about being a part of. Uh-huh. They had a scout at Hamilton. So when we got home on Sunday night, on Monday, he was at his mom's house and the scout called up and he said, hey, I liked what you did at the Hamilton camp. Would you be interested in playing for the Stars? Now, this is a big jump. So, I think back then it was about 5,000 a year to be on the team, cover travel and the coach's fees and whatever. So that's much different than when I was paying like $750 for house. So I'm a processor. So when you tell me something, I need to like chew on it and then I can react accordingly.
Right.
Unfortunately, my son needed me to be excited dad and I was rational dad. So he called me on Monday. He's like, dad, the Stars called me. They want me to play and all of these things. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, that's going to be really expensive. I'm like, how are we going to make this work? Instead of just being like, yes, Alex, yes. I love you. Yeah. This is so cool. Right. I can't believe you did it. That's what he needed. And I was practical dad. And that's one moment I wish I could go back and just be like, oh my God, yes. I knew it. I believe in you. You know, I told him all those things later, but at that moment, the other end of the phone went silent because he was like, you know, I thought you'd be more excited. I'm like, I truly am excited, but I'm also daunted by how we're going to come up with this extra money, you know?
Right.
So I was focused on the money and not on the opportunity. And that was something I can never get back. But he played 2 years with the Stars, his senior year of high school. He signed with a team down in Boston, the EHL. He played with the Junior Rangers down there. It's a very good program. Unfortunately, that was COVID year. So almost sort of like you, they were like, I think they only had 4 losses in the regular season. And then when the playoffs started, that's when COVID hit. So he didn't get their championship was going to be at Providence. So they're all excited. They're going to play at Providence College and then COVID hit. So he came back to Syracuse and he went to high school for one day because he did his stuff online until. Yeah. So he came to high school for one day and then that was the first case of COVID in New York, in Syracuse. So then we were closed on Tuesday. So he went to one in-person day of high school his senior year.
Oh my gosh.
And he lost his baseball season too. So not only did he lose the hockey thing, the year after he played for a team in New Hampshire. And then this past year he started with a team in Maine and then the team went under. So he was able to catch on with one of his former teammates from the Stars and played with a team in Fort Wayne, Indiana, which was tough. But just because when he was with the Stars and even when he played on the teams in Massachusetts and New Hampshire, I was at most or all of the games. Like, they always call me hockey dad because I was always there. Like all these other dads, whatever. I sacrificed. I would stay in hotels. I would go to the games and I would just be there. But when he was in Fort Wayne, that just wasn't going to happen. I did see his last like full game he played in the playoffs. I took a train on Saturday night at like 10 in the evening all the way out to Fort Wayne. So it was kind of good. I slept most of the way and then I woke up at 8 a.m. in Fort Wayne and he picked me up at the train station. I got to watch him play that game. We have pictures of it. And then unfortunately they got upset the next weekend. They had a chance because I was like, all right, next weekend you guys win and I'll see you at Nationals. And then they got upset. So that I watched his hockey career end on TV. So I just wept like a baby at home. Those are 5 years I would never trade. And the fact that he's decided not to play anymore, just made it all the more, you know, all those little trips, like stopping at a greasy diner. I would always find these little hole in the wall places with great food for low prices and taking his teammates out to dinner. And those are the memories that we can never ever take away. So
absolutely.
So this year's been tough cause I'm used to running around and I'm like, so what do I do on the weekend? So hopefully two of the girls I coach on volleyball play hockey. So I'll just ask them today. I'm like, hey, let me know when your next game is. I might stop by.
Oh man. I mean, that's kind of the appeal of coaching basketball too. It's like, well, it's baseball off season. It's perfectly done where it ends in March, early March. And then great. Now, you know, what do I do on the weekends when you don't have to write an SP roundup? Well, I coach basketball, you know, that sounds wonderful though. I mean, I'm really happy that you had this medium too, to be able to connect with your son. And give him the support that he needed, as well, as which is really, really wonderful.
Yeah, the last season was tough, and we kind of talked about this off air, but he suffered a concussion in Maine. And then when he got out to Fort Wayne, like a month and a half later, he had a second concussion. And that was another part that really spoiled his last year, and which is why he decided, because he could have played at a couple of different colleges, and he also had a couple of like to play in the Fed League, but you know, that's a low entry professional. But the Fed League would be like playing in Slapshot. And he was like, Dad, I'm not gonna, with the two concussions, it's just time. And you know, the second one really sent him into a downward spiral. Not only like my career's kind of ending in this fashion. He had a little bit of, and he shared it with me, the battles with, you know, slight depression and stuff that happened during that as an after effect of all that. And that's something that unfortunately he's probably going to have to deal with, through his adulthood, which is tough.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. When we talked about the reflections, he wrote a thing that we're going to clean up, but he wants to use it as one of our reflection articles. He wrote about his concussions and trying to be the tough guy and skate off the ice instead of getting the help he needed at that moment. And, you know, to just tell kids, you know, if you get the concussion, it is something you need to pay attention to. It's not like, oh, I just got a concussion, I'll get the smelling salts and get back out there. You got to be smart with these things.
Yeah. It's, I've had at least one, I know for a fact. I think I'd likely had two in my day. I'm also, I don't know if I've mentioned this before. I also have a history of fainting, actually, which I'm not ashamed about. It's just something that I've had through my days, that I'm aware of. I understand a lot of the, of what goes into it, and it's terrifying. And, I got one in Australia when I was on like a one of those trips you do as a kid for a month or so. And we were traveling between our campsite and Uluru, Aries Rock, halfway in between, middle of nowhere, like the true outback, Alice Springs of Australia. And we stopped to just, we had sandwiches. We're just going to eat, set up a little thing. We're playing two-hand touch football on rock, essentially, just like kind of like messing around, like whatever. It was like sandish rock, and I was running away from someone. I was like getting blitzed by the person, and I tried to move to my left, so I slipped and I fell over and hit my head. And I remember it was more terrifying for everybody else, because I'm not aware what's going on, and then everybody is seeing me there. I can't help but always reflect of like, what was I like before and after that? I don't know. I mean, I was 14 or so. I mean, I was a year, regardless of what happened, I would have been very different, you know? Another time I was playing football, stupid. I thought I had an interception and collided straight into somebody just looking at the ball, just two-hand touch in the park. I stopped playing football, everybody. Football shouldn't exist. It's terrible. Football shouldn't exist because of all the concussions you don't hear about, right? But it is a real thing. And, it's just more in the whole tune. I think it's been wonderful to see the outpouring of mental health awareness over the past just 5 years, even, that was not present when I was a kid.
I wish it had been.
I'm officially diagnosed as having anxiety now. And I didn't even know I had that until like 29, 30 years old. And it just explains so much. And, there would have been ways to help with that. And it would have helped many things. And it's fine. I'm okay. I was able to, figure out my own solutions for a lot of it. But there's so many more people that have something way worse than that, or that don't, it's such a thing. It's shocking to me, as if it's such a stigma, and it's a shame or something. It's not. It's so normal, and I'm sorry to hear the effect it's had on your son. I'm glad to hear, at least it sounds to me as if he doesn't treat it like a stigma of any kind.
When he was in Fort Wayne, he went and saw a therapist on his own.
Fantastic.
That's more guts than I ever had.
That's wonderful, really.
I'm sure I've gone through episodes, whether it was depression or anxiety myself, and I've never had the guts to go see somebody about it, which I probably should have in the past, but I'm in a much better place now with him being at peace and being with Katie. But there was times in I'm sure that I would just stay home and play baseball and stay in my, because no one can hurt me if I'm because the days he was at his mom's was when I would always, you know, I'd focus on writing. So like, you know,
sure,
you know, I would just hide in my little bubble and just write fantasy baseball and just let the world be outside.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's a whole thing to be said about, well, therapists cost like $100 or so an hour, and it's not, healthcare needs to change. Okay. We need to make sure that people have that, and also have professionals that are good enough at it too.
Yes.
Man, there's so many things we need good people for. and this is certainly one that we need to give a lot of attention to, but I'm just going to stop talking about all of that. And you mentioned writing about fantasy baseball. What a wonderful segue. So that's, you know, you do that a lot now. What was the first time that you jumped into the field?
My Nando DeFino story. So he's a graduate of Christian Brothers Academy. I did not teach Nando, but I taught his brother and sister. So anyways, when his sister, I think, was a junior or senior, his mom must have heard me talking about fantasy baseball or whatever. So she left the book Fantasyland in my mailbox at school. So I took it home and I read it in about a day and a half. And then I was like, I found out about this Nando character. I mean, I knew who Nando was, but I didn't know him. So
right. When
I saw Mrs. DeFino, I was like, hey, I can't believe Nando did all this. I'm so jealous. I'm like, can you get me in touch with him? So I emailed him and he's like, oh my God. He was at CBA when I was coaching volleyball. I just wasn't teaching at that point. But he knew a lot of my players and this, that, and the other. So anyways, he got me linked up with these young guys that were running their own site called Roto Analysis. And they let me do some freelance, and I started doing a bunch of articles, and then I just got all into it. And those guys were all starting to do college and getting busy with their majors, and they had less time to devote to the site. So it almost became like me and another guy named Tim King, we were kind of rolling out most of the content. They would just edit it for me. And, you know, I made some mistakes early on. They would help me fix it, but it wasn't like, you know, perfect. And then Tim got an offer to write for FanRag back then when they burst onto the scene.
FanRag,
and
right.
Then he's like, hey, you know, I told him I'll come if you come with me. So I was like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. So we both went to, and that's where by working at FanRag, I got to know Al Melchior. And a couple of other good people. And, you know, FanRag fed into my writing. You know, I love putting out content. So they would pay, like, I think it was $15 a column. So I was just like popping them out as fast as I could to get those $15. You know, writing for free is one thing, but I was getting $15 for an article. This is great. And then once, you know, Al would have me on the show with them and things of that nature. So that's how, that grew. And then when FanRag went under, I was kind of at a crossroads. I was like, am I going to keep trying to do fantasy stuff, or should I just, you know, take my win from getting paid and walk away? And I sent an email out to Spore, and I sent one to Howard Bender from Fantasy Alarm, because I had done some stuff with Fantasy Alarm, but I was like on the update desk, and that was talk about anxiety. Be on the update desk during the NBA. Whew, no way. So anyways, I quit doing that, but they both took me back. Well, not took me back. Spore hired me and Al to do the closer chart things, that the closer updates. So I had, I think, Tuesday and Saturday, and Al had like 3 days, and somebody else did a couple. So that got me back. That got me back in the door. A couple of different other sites had me doing closers already, so that was just a natural transition. Right. And that's when I started doing the charts, when I was doing them for free, was to keep me in tune. So when I did my stuff for FanGraphs, I was dialed in. It wasn't like something would happen on Saturday. I'm like, oh my God, how did this happen? By doing it every day. I was like, oh, I got it. Talk about routine. And then I had a pretty good run at Fantasy Alarm, but you know, I was starting to, it was like, I was doing some DFS and other things, and it wasn't my passion. Like, I don't mind DFS, but it wasn't like, I didn't care about writing an article about the three hitters you should target on some Sunday afternoon slate. It just didn't get my juices flowing. So at the end I was like, actually Aaron and Nate that are with me at Reliever Icon, they're like, you know, people will pay for your charts. I'm like, no one's going to pay for my charts. I put them out for free. They're like, people will pay for them. I was like, so then we started talking, and then I got the Bullpen Guru and Eric Samolsky because of his great work with videos. And I was like, all right, listen, if we do this, I want the four of you with me and we're going to do it right. I'm used to doing content, so that's not an issue. And we'll roll this out and see what happens. So, Lever Recon was born. I gave my notice there. And then, you know, in the middle of all of that, Nando came back around with the offer to write for The Athletic to be their closer expert, which I won't put in quotations anymore. And,
thank you very much.
And so that's, I've done 2 years of that. And then Reliever Recon is in its second year. And then, you know, I literally cried in my office when I got the email from Jeff Erickson about Tout, because, you know some people take it for granted, but when you're an independent working your tail off,
yeah,
and you finally get recognized like at that sort of a thing. I was in my office crying and somebody was like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "I'm happy, but."
Well, yeah.
Jeff Erickson like followed me back and then he DM'd me.
Was 2020 or 2021 your first year?
I've only been in 2 years, so 2021.
Okay, 2021. Well, we've been in the same league, I think, for both of them.
Yeah, but yeah. We've never been in person. Both years have been online, which stinks.
Oh, right. I mean, my first year was 2020. So and I was looking forward to it so much. It was, yeah. And they were coming to New York. I didn't have to, you know.
Right, right.
If COVID happened like 3 weeks later. I've never done a live auction before.
We used to in my home league, and that's what started me in all this. So
there you go.
And the funny thing was that the home league, the closers every year, everyone would be bidding like $30. I'm like, I'm not paying $30 for a closer. So I
right,
would just,
it's great.
I would grind all season long to find the guys. So, and then that's what it just, it's just weird how all of the things just.
Well, that's interesting that, you know, that would, I would think benefit you. Is it, where are they spending their money on the thing that you're best at? Great. That means you can spend less mm-hmm. to get something more value out of it relative to other people, which means you can spend more money on the thing that you don't really, I mean, yeah. Not to say that you're not an expert in everything of it, but it's not your
that
strength.
That happened to me in TGFBI this past year. I was in the league with Dalton Del Don and mm-hmm. Scott Jenstad. It was, and then Ben Tidd, who had like an unbelievable year in NFBC. He was in my TGFBI league. And Drew from Common Sense Fantasy, I mean, stacked. And right. Everybody in there was just loading up on closers. So I was like,
yeah, it's like, okay.
So all I took Romano and then I pieced it together. I still came in third in saves, but I'm comfortable doing that. Other people can't do those sorts of things.
So here's the thing, you know, we just got to find our hitting guy, Greg, because the three of us will take down NFBC. All I ask is that I don't have to actually be the one to set up the fab bids on Sunday. I will be there to consult and tell you the ones that I would go with and everything like that every week. But that's my role in this mm-hmm. in this party that we'll set up. We'll figure this out. We'll make it happen. You don't need me.
Wow.
So tough. you started Reliever Recon. When was this? In 2020 or 2021?
We started in October of last year.
Okay.
We put out some free content and then we went live in November. I mean,
fantastic.
And it's been, I mean, today's the 14th. I've already, between me and Aaron, we've already posted a team. We do a year in review just to kind of look back on what happened to kind of set the tempo for next year. So we've already put out one a day in November. Mm-hmm. I've done two coffee and closers. I went on Sunday. I went through just kind of like the early ADP fused in with the steamer projections. And it's just fun. I'm like, use the steamer projections for what they are right now. It's just a baseline. But you know, and Rob Silver and I were talking, and I know we were talking at one of the games, and you know, he's like, watch what happens with Hader's ADP when steamer comes out and everyone realizes that Josh Hader's Josh Hader and not the person who had a 1 month,
disaster.
Going through a very complicated birth of his child.
Right.
Being traded from the only organization he's been with for all those years from Milwaukee. Yeah. I mean, Milwaukee's at the end of the year, guys. I mean, when the trade happened, guys like Devin Williams were like, "Why are they trading Josh Hader?" I mean, that took a part of that team away. I mean, that was, you know, you can't understand what happens till you remove somebody from that situation.
Sure, right.
So with everything he was going through, he needed time to just heal. I mean, I, you know, when I got divorced, that year was probably the worst year I coached. I was not a good person.
Sure, yeah.
You know, you're going through stuff. And yeah. I think Josh Hader did that. And now, you know, people are like, oh, wait a minute. In the playoffs, he's hitting 100 miles an hour, which he doesn't normally do. He's free and happy. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, there's so many things that go on that we don't understand, but yeah.
Right. Alex Think Fast has arrived in the Nick and Nick Pollock and Friends show. And what are your, you know, what are your goals and aspirations for it? You know, it, when you're doing this, is there another step that you want to be reaching that you're chasing right now? Is it more of the same?
No, I'm too old to do this full time. I don't think that's, you know, I never know. At a point I thought I wanted to do this full time, mm-hmm. but you know, then at the same token, then you sit down with your financial planner and he's like, well, you'd be crazy to retire before this point because, you know, with the health benefits and things I would receive, if I teach 10 more years, it'd be bad of me not to do it unless I won some sort of big bonk of money that I didn't need to teach. That'd be a different thing.
I'll talk to some people for you, Greg.
Yeah. I'm very happy with where I am as far as the right. I mean, you know, it's tough. Like I was very nervous when I quit Fantasy Alarm because it's like, all right, that's money every month. And sure. I know I have a place to write, and to go out and do the recon on my own. It was a leap I never would have taken. And I give my son credit for that because him and Katie, my girlfriend right now, we've been dating almost 3 years. They were both like, do it. You know, it's time. They're like, you're not happy. Go. You know,
right. Yeah.
Do it. And like I said, I never planned on it being as successful as it was. But here we are. So, you know, it's, and it's funny because everybody wants more rankings because of you.
Rankings existed way before I showed up, Greg.
Nah, not with the volume, but anyways, I'm like, I'm not a big rankings guy. It's like, okay. So if I put this reliever at number 15 and this reliever at number 19, that means he's the better fit for your team. Not necessarily, but people, Aaron said it best to me. He's like, he goes, Greg, people want fish tacos. They don't want a fishing pole. Like I like the fishing pole. I'm like, hey, I want
to. Yeah. Right.
I talk about the leverage ladders.
I like the way, yeah.
What innings they're in.
I like that.
He's like, he goes, oh.
They just want to fish. They don't want to learn how to
fish. Be able to look
fish.
At the thing and go, okay, Greg likes this guy better. So I'm adding
right.
him. And I'm like,
yeah.
That drives me crazy, but it's where
it drives me crazy too. It drives me absolutely insane. I think the funniest thing that I've had experience wise with like my rankings and stuff is a Twitch user said during like me making my rankings, I do it every week on Twitch, right? In season, said, hey, where do you have this guy? Or I think it was like, where do you have Shane Bieber? And I said, I think it's like right now it's at like 21. I don't know if that's going to stick or so. He goes, well, is it going to be above this other guy? I'm like, yes. And he goes, thank you. I'm like, yeah. Well, why? Wait, why? He goes, oh, I bet my buddy $50 that he'd be above this guy on your list this week. And I'm like, but it doesn't matter. Like this guy and hit this guy, like they're pretty much the same. Like, it, you know, they're in the same tier. Somebody needs to be above somebody, but it doesn't mean that he's definitely better or something. Mm-hmm. You know, you just... You know, when you go out to dinner, you have to order something on the menu. It doesn't mean that that's necessarily the best thing on the menu. It's just like, I guess I'll have that today, you know, mm-hmm. like they're all great. Yep. It's so funny to me. And
people just want them. They want to go.
Oop, yeah. Oop, they want to know the thing and do, you know, like feel, have some sort of
that's good
confirmation bias at times mm-hmm. often. But hey, all right. I'm happy to serve and I'm sure you are too. Oh, that cracked me up. Like, oh God, now I'm going to be like involved in betting. This is great. Like, hey, next time DM me first so I can ensure that you win your $50. No, I would never compromise the list, everybody, please. What were your expectations? I mean, you started a Patreon is what it is. Patreon.com/reliever recon. Go sign up and support Greg and the crew. What expectations did you have for it when you started?
Part of it was just to prove that we could do it. You know, I wasn't sure that people would be so in tuned with, relievers, but the nice thing is, Bullpen Guru, he does like a daily stream thing and it's, but mm-hmm. it's so good. a reader like tracked his results, and
yeah,
he would put out like, all right, if you're looking for a cheap win today, these are the couple of relievers that are going to take over for a guy who might not go five innings. I mean, he's right. Like dialed in. If you're in like a Yahoo head to head league, I mean, he's worth the subscription alone. If you're somebody that just streams, right. You know, and then I do my closer chart updates every day. So I update the charts on the Google Docs, but I also do like a long form like thing. So like if I see a guy's, like when Camilo Duvall was throwing a sinker all of a sudden in August, which he hadn't done all season. Mm-hmm. And then he started getting better results. It's like, so I can do a little long form, like, hey, Camilo's doing
the ball. There you go.
But then it also, you know, when I'm doing it again, like I say, when I do it day to day, so when I don't want to call it lazy, but I feel like sometimes when people are like, oh, send in questions, it's like, they don't know what to write about. Mm-hmm. I don't know that. That's how I like, there's a couple of times, like, I don't know what to write about. So like, oh, let's put it to the reader questions. And I'm like, well, I don't really, this is easy to answer. So I'm like, I'm just gonna, so by doing the stuff, I'm able to stay dialed in on day-to-day things. So like when Kimbrel's falling apart, or, you know, every year Kenley Jansen goes through a blip where everybody's ready to throw him out as closer, and then he finishes year strong, and right. You know, there's all these things, and then it just gives me what I want to write about every Tuesday for poor Nando or Brando Funston, who has to edit the Leviathan I turn in every week. I mean, God bless the people who read my, I mean, the stuff on The Athletic, I mean, it's long. I mean, right. I turn them in. It's usually with all my pictures and things and charts and yeah. everything. It ends up being like, it's like a 15 page document I'm sending in to these poor guys.
And I'm sure everybody loves it. But Greg, thank you so much for spending all of this time talking to me, getting to understand you way better. I've enjoyed this thoroughly, and also indulging me with all my coaching stuff.
I'll talk coaching any day of the week, and I appreciate you having me on and getting to know about you as well. I mean, this is cool. I mean, it's one thing to see each other first pitch. You know, I love first pitch, but I feel like it's so like compressed and action packed. And then like even I was on a panel Saturday night.
Yeah.
And like, I literally had to do the Irish goodbye. Like my Uber was pulling in. I stood up from my panel. I'm like, all right, guys, be good. And I grabbed my bag and I walked out to the front desk.
Oh my God.
Cause I had a red eye back here because I had to teach on Monday. I'm like, I would have loved to stay and do stuff Sunday.
Yeah.
But if I did that, I wouldn't get home till like midnight. And then I got to turn around and teach it the next day. I would have been shot. We had our first game of the year that Monday, the 7th. And that was my son's 21st birthday. I was like, I gotta be home and relax. So,
right. But it was, I was one of the lucky ones.
Wait a minute, I didn't even get to see you. I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry.
I was one of the lucky ones. I got to hang out with you in between. Mm-hmm. But of course, the question I ask everybody, what mantras do you have? Or one?
What I'm trying to get better at, and God bless, there's a teacher at CBA. Well, not even a teacher. She's the head of campus ministry. Years and years ago, we would do overnight retreats, and I would help supervise because none of the guys wanted to stay overnight with teenage boys at this place out near the water. It's a beautiful place, but anyways.
Yeah, but that's just no.
So one time, stuff was going on, so I wasn't asked to be a speaker, but I got up in the middle of the thing. I'm like, hey guys, if we're out here and we're doing this, you need to invest. Invest. I mean, you've got all these people coming out here telling you these great stories. It'd be almost like what we're doing here. And I'm like, and you're just goofing around. I'm like, you know, stop being teenage boys. Take your walls down and invest. Invest in this time. Invest in each other and get something out of this experience. So then the next year, the leadership committee was like, hey, remember what Mr. Jewis said? We want him to talk. So I always get to talk about lowering your walls and being vulnerable and you know, being kind. And you know, I'm competitive as there is. I mean, I'm super competitive. Like, I was DMing with Frank when we were in the tout head-to-head finals, and I realized I could have used a pitcher on Monday and benched him over the weekend. I didn't know that. I played in that league for 2 years, had no idea
I could
do that.
I know.
Pissed. And poor Peter Chris was like, he made the finals without knowing that. I'm like, I might have won if I had.
Frank won that league twice in a row now, and I'm really upset. Again, he beat me in the semis the previous year. I'm like, ugh.
I'm super competitive, and I know Ariel was keeping track. Cause like Ariel's like, if you didn't beat me, I might have won. I was like, well, what it is.
Sorry, anyways, Ariel. If some butts were candy and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas.
But anyways, just, you know, you can be competitive, but you know, be good to other people. And, and sometimes you do have to lower the walls, which doing this exact podcast is that the whole format of it.
Right.
And accepting the risk, you know, I was very risk averse. I would never, ever take chances. So then, you know, recon for me was totally flying without a net. I was like, okay, because if this fails, then I'm just working for the Athletic, and
right.
I don't know if I can just write once a week. So, it gives me an outlet and, you know, possible future opportunities. We don't know what's going to happen with all this as it comes down the pike, but, we prove that you could just write about relievers and get at our high point in the summer. We had over 700 subscribers. Just
that's wonderful. Reading about, really, that's fantastic.
Yeah, you know, and as a grassroots, I mean, we just, you know, I believe in the quality and what we put out, and you know, it just represent yourself, believe in what you believe in, what you're capable of, and you just do it. And again, you do have to take risk. Just put yourself out there. I think that's the world needs more people willing to put themselves out there and be good to others.
There you go. I absolutely love it. And Greg, really, thank you so much for being part of the show. Remind everybody what you're doing and where they can find you.
So Reliever Recon's rocking. You know, on the Patreon, you can find us in any format there. We've already put out tons of content in November to get us ready. And right now we're very NFBC specific. It's not, you know, that is a lot of our membership drives the bus. But you know, we cater to all formats, but, begrudgingly, I'll probably put out a rankings next weekend, just like a too soon, just whatever.
Yeah. You have to do it. And then you correct it later.
And once the non-tenders happen, we'll have a better idea of them. I mean, the market's already been thinned. I mean, hey guys, teams that are contending are paying for relievers. I mean, this isn't like, you know,
yeah,
it is what it is. Rafael Montero could have been a closer, someone else, but Suarez. Houston said we want him in the eighth inning. So they gave him closer money. You know, Robert Suarez took a big pay raise to stay with San Diego because they probably think they can't sign Hader next year. You know, so Suarez, those were two guys we were saying early on that could be late stabs that have already absolved, but more things will happen. The non-tender will come around and we'll figure all that out. But yeah, it'll be fun. And putting the closer puzzle together is always intriguing. And then I actually get to play in the main event this year, so that's going to be exciting as well.
Oh, man. Go kill it, Greg.
I won my main event qualifier, so I'm speaking of risk, I'm jumping in with all the Sharks. So
let's do it. You don't need me at all. What am I even saying before? I'm nothing.
I need all the help I can get.
Get out of here. But all right, that is going to do for this episode of Nick Pollock and Friends. My name is Nick Pollock, and that was my friend, Greg Jewett.